From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, after the elections, which party controls the state Senate hangs in limbo. Our political observer Alan Shartok will share his thoughts on that. And Governor Cuomo says damage from Superstorm Sandy will cost New York $33 billion. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. When the final votes were counted on election night, the fate of the New York State Senate still hung in limbo. We take you to the 46th Senate District, where when the machine vote count was complete on election night, Republican George Amador trailed Democrat Cecilia Kacik by 139 votes, leaving the outcome of a race that could be the one that decides which party controls the New York State Senate. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports the final tally could take weeks.
Approximately 10,000 absentee and affidavit ballots must be counted. Both sides will be in state Supreme Court in Montgomery County on Friday to determine how those votes will be counted. Vic Work is the Democratic Elections Commissioner in Ulster County, where 4,000 absentee ballots have come in.
Starting somewhere around the 20th of November, we'll start counting the absentee ballots. There's also a court order. We haven't been served yet, but there's a court order signed by a judge for the Amador campaign directing us not to count anything until we start the 20th.
Ballots had to have been postmarked by November 5th to qualify. The process ensures one's right to vote is upheld. Gerald Benjamin is a professor of political science at SUNY New Paltz. He says people should be able to vote and be included wherever they are, as long as a way can be found to do that.
The system should err in the direction of inclusion without permitting or encouraging a fraudulent practice. And sometimes when margins are closed, the absentees are consequential in every vote. It's more arduous to count these votes. And, of course, the candidates anxious to win engage their surrogates in making sure that the votes are legitimate. And the complicated side of this in New York, I guess, is that we have an enormous amount of litigation surrounding our election practices, far more than in most other states. And we have lots of developed law on this, and we have courts very insistent on dotting every I and crossing every T and making sure ballots, when they're cast, are legitimate. So it can become an arduous and time-consuming process.
And in the Amador Kacik case, there is an extra factor to consider involving the presidential election. Vic Work explains that his people have been directed by the State Board of Elections to certify the presidential count for Ulster County by December 1st.
So they can certify by December 15th. So they can elect the electors, because you didn't actually vote for the president, you voted for the electors. We can't very well count the absentees for the presidential race and not at least open the ballot for the Kacik-Amador race, because they're on the same piece of paper. And we may wind up counting them for the president and then putting them back in the envelope and not counting for Amador Kacik.
Work says the court will make the final decision on what course to follow. Both the Amador and Kacik campaigns will be able to set aside any ballot they find objectionable. Gerald Benjamin elaborates.
So a ballot is held up and you inspect it, your person inspects it and knows what the law is, what the ballot has to, how it has to be marked, how it has to be kind of identified and so on. and you watch the process, and if you have a concern about a particular ballot, you challenge it in the moment. So the presumption that is that you have been present and monitoring the process, and therefore, and had your opportunity when the ballot was brought forward. Now, if you think that there's systematic bias in the Board of Elections in qualifying a ballot, you would go on the record at that moment saying, I object to this, I object to that, and at the end of the day, you might have created a record to bring it before a court, you see. But you're in the process, so you're in observing the process, so the outcome then would be presumably the result would have been observed in its process by both sides. Now, that's why, or all sides, so that's why it's arduous. Counting 10,000 ballots is not hard. Counting them under scrutiny systematically, with challenges going forward, potentially on every point, makes it harder and longer.
Vic Work adds that any delay in ballot counting could possibly extend the process into the new year, leaving citizens in the 46th temporarily without a sitting representative until the winner is finally determined. Following Tuesday's other election results, Democrats held a 31-30 lead in the state Senate, which requires 32 votes to pass measures.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Governor Cuomo says damage from Superstorm Sandy will cost New York $33 billion in property damage and economic losses. The governor, at a briefing, said the storm revealed severe vulnerabilities in the state's gasoline distribution system, as Long Island and New York announced gasoline rationing that began on Friday. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Governor Cuomo says Sandy's total costs for New York are now $33 billion.
That is a staggering number, especially with the financial situation that we've been in.
The state has already had to cut more than $10 billion from its budget over the past 2 years, and New York already has a $1 billion structural deficit for next year's budget, and that gap could grow, says Cuomo. The governor, speaking a week and a half after Sandy and one day after a second storm brought snow and wind to the downstate region, says power outages and gas shortages continue. Cuomo railed against the utilities working to restore electricity on Long Island and in Westchester and other parts of the Hudson Valley, saying they are archaic and obsolete monopolies that need to be modernized to be more efficient when major storms occur.
I think this is a system that we're going to have to look at a ground-up redesign.
Cuomo says power companies were unprepared for the storm, at one point running out of new poles to replace damaged ones. He says the utilities have failed, and he warns they'll be held accountable through the state's Public Service Commission, which regulates utilities. Cuomo says concerns continue about gasoline supplies, and he says the current distribution system in the state is a severe vulnerability.
I mean, look how fast you can shut down the region just by shutting down the pumps. And many things shut down the pumps, as we learned the hard way. Power outage shuts down the pumps. Storm shuts down the pumps. A broken pipe shuts down the pumps.
The Buckeye Pipeline, which the governor's office says pumps approximately 4.5 million gallons of gas per day into the New York City and Long Island area, was sidelined for a time when the second storm caused more power outages. The governor says he's open to a bill to require gas stations to own generators in case of power failure, but he wants to make sure first that it would not further drive up the cost of fuel. Cuomo did not impose state rationing of gasoline, but the city of New York and Long Island announced odd-even day gas rationing. Cuomo says once the power is back on and the gasoline is flowing normally, the next chapter will be coping with extreme weather that the governor says he believes is here to stay.
There is a wake-up call here, and there is a lesson to be learned. There's a reality that has existed for a long time that we have been blind to.
He says he and other officials will have to decide how and where to rebuild and how to use new technologies to provide better protection from floods in the future. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, President Obama, of course, winning another four-year term, defeating Mitt Romney. But closer to home, the battle seems to be in New York over the state Senate. We have a couple of races still undecided, going to legal battles, especially this one in the 46th District, the newly drawn 46th Senate District, which pits George Amador, who is the Republican assemblyman, who's taken on Cecilia Kacik, who is a school board member, and she is leading now by 139 votes. Amador sued the day after election to impound the affidavit and absentee ballots. But, Alan, we really don't know yet and won't know for at least 2 weeks what's going to happen with the New York State Senate.
Okay, everybody, now just listen up. I'm going to tell you what this is all about. Obviously, the control of the New York State Senate is something that a whole bunch of people want to have for their side. The people on the right, and there's a lot of money there, have spent a great deal of money to make sure that the Republicans stay in control in the Senate. You know who else seems to want that? The governor of New York. That's right. The Democratic governor of New York, who has styled himself as a fiscal conservative, would rather have the Republicans, I believe, who would be fiscally conservative, than the Democrats who he figures might want to spend too much money. And it is true, and he is right, that the last time they had a chance of that, a few years ago, the Democrats behaved very badly in every way possible. Several of them are on their way to jail right now because they saw a pot of money which they couldn't resist. In any case, there are some very good Democrats in the New York State Senate. And the whole question of if the Democrats do succeed and do take over their house, will their bad behavior show itself again, or will they let good people like Senator Breslin from the Albany area or Liz Krueger from the east side of Manhattan? These are the good people who can really run this place right. But the situation gets even more complicated because four of those Democrats, so unhappy with the way things were going with their conference, split off into a separate caucus. And they have been negotiating with the Republicans. Now, let's say you were in the Bronx and you had a senator named Klein and you thought that you were voting for the Democrats, but he really turns out to be a secret Republican. Would you like that? I don't think so. So there's a great amount of pressure on everybody here to negotiate this thing. If I was betting one way or the other, those people who thought they were voting for Democrats so we'd have a Democratic Senate and blue state Democrat in New York are going to be wrong and are going to be losers once again, because I think that the power elite, the power structure will figure out a way to keep the Republicans in office by hook or by crook.
I wonder who's going to win out when it comes to hydraulic fracturing, Alan, because I see on the wires as we're speaking this morning on a Thursday, supporters of the shale drilling process known as fracking have won their election races in the southern tier.
Well, yes, there is no question that those people who live in places where there is proposed hydraulic fracturing see this as a gold rush. That doesn't mean it's right. It just means that some of those folks, not all of them, certainly have heard from a lot of them who are not, are ready to take the money and maybe run. Who knows? But if somebody comes along and you've been trying to scratch out a living as a poor farmer, and all of a sudden somebody comes along and said, I'll give you millions, and by the way, we're going to set up all kinds of things here, and we'll have a lot of industry, and there'll be a lot of jobs in a place where there weren't jobs, you might very well vote for those people who are committed to it.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. With New York a crucial state in congressional elections this year, we take you to New York's 21st congressional race, where, as the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports, it was a long night for those waiting for results when Congressman Bill Owens announced his opponent had conceded.
It was a tense night at Democratic headquarters in Plattsburgh Tuesday night as returns for the 21st Congressional District trickled in and showed an extremely tight race all evening. Supporters had been told Congressman Owens would not appear until there was a clear winner. It was nearly midnight before the results showed incumbent Democrat Bill Owens leading Republican challenger Matt Doheny by about 4,000 votes. And the relief was palpable as Bill Owens entered the room.
Ladies and gentlemen, our congressman!
Thank you very much. I just want you to know that I just want you to know that about 3 minutes ago, Matt Doheny called me to concede. First thing, obviously, I need to do is simply thank everybody. We obviously had a great victory tonight. As I'm sure you've heard, the president has won. We have retained control of the Senate, it appears. And my hope is that what this causes us to do is to come to rational compromise when we go back in the next couple of weeks. We get through the lame duck session with something substantive to show to the American people, and that next year we do things which are of benefit to us all. What I intend to bring back to Congress is the desire to reach out to people across the aisle and to forge compromises that make sense, but ultimately, to go back to the same theme, to drive forward all of us together so that we have a better life for ourselves, our children, and our grandchildren. Thank you very much.
Clinton County Democratic Chair Marty Mannix was celebrating the Democratic win.
There's a couple things that are really significant going on with this election. One is we've seen quality beat money. All Doheny's attack ads came from the super PACs. This is the kind of thing that sends a real strong message that you're not going to be able to buy an election. Bill Owens is exactly what we need in Congress. He is a moderate person. He's a person that believes in consensus. He will find the compromise that people can live with. And that is what we need going forward.
Republican Matt Doheny told his supporters in Watertown that the campaign simply came up short.
We put a lot of resources against Mr. Owens. Sometimes, and I've learned in politics, things just don't go your way. You know, if you look at the results today, I don't know how Republican this 21st congressional district is anymore. And you'll see with the President Obama numbers, you know, it was very challenging.
Bill Owens says he's not worried about 20,000 outstanding absentee ballots.
Historically, we know that absentee ballots tend to fall pretty much in line with the ballots cast on election day.
So you're not worried about the absentee?
No.
Now, you've asked for the ballot machines to be impounded.
Right.
Will you rescind that request?
I haven't given it a moment's thought at this point. We'll think about that tomorrow when I have a little clearer idea of how I feel.
With 98% of the votes counted, the unofficial results show Owens with 50% to Doheny's 48%, a difference of just over 5,500 votes. There appears to be a clear split in the newly drawn district, with Democrat Bill Owens carrying the northern counties of the old district, while Republican Matt Doheny prevailed in the new southern counties of the 21st district.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A week after the devastation left by Hurricane Sandy, a nor'easter caused more damage this week, and the bad weather has brought the issue of climate change to the forefront. President Obama even gave a brief mention to the warming planet in his acceptance speech on election night. The Innovation Trail's Marie Cusick reports now that according to a new study published this week in the journal Science, we can expect global warming to be on the high side of current projections.
In the coming century, will New York warm up by 3 degrees Fahrenheit and have a climate more like Richmond, Virginia? Or will it rise 8 degrees and become more like the state capital of Georgia, a city nicknamed Hotlanta? That's the range currently represented by more than 24 different climate models. But new research shows the higher, hotter predictions are more likely to be accurate.
We should expect that large changes will occur in the future. And You know, it's a very qualitative description to say it'll be more like Atlanta, Georgia, but certainly New York will warm up, as will, you know, cities throughout the world.
That's John Fasulo, a scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research. He's the lead author on the study, which analyzes the differences between 16 different climate models.
We really just wanted to ask the naive question as to which model best reproduced what we saw in the satellite observations.
Fasulo was trying to work around the problem of clouds. They're key atmospheric indicators, but they can be tricky to observe with precision. And that can lead to a lot of variation between climate models.
An easier way to approach the problem was to look at the environment in which clouds exist and ask the question, which models give the best representation of that environment?
He looked at the atmospheric dry zones in the subtropics and found that most climate models fail to account for this dryness. The models that do tend to show the most warming in the future.
You can kind of think of these dry zones as an iris of the climate system. And so as the system warms up, the iris dilates and lets more sunlight into the system.
And more warming can lead to more powerful storms, which draw on energy from warmer ocean temperatures. Kevin Trenberth co-authored the study. He's also a scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research.
So the odds of this sort of thing happening, the odds of a strong storm, are increasing.
Hurricanes like Sandy occur naturally, but Trenberth says that between 5 and 10% of their power can be attributed to man-made global warming.
You know, when you're having storm surges that are flooding the subway system, 10% effect might be enough that if you didn't have it, it wouldn't have flooded.
For years, these scientific warnings have come up against public skepticism and political apathy. But that may be starting to change. In the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg gave a surprise endorsement to President Obama just before the election, praising his leadership on climate change. Governor Andrew Cuomo also brought up the issue as he toured the devastation in the beachfront community of Breezy Point, Queens.
I think there is climate change. I think that is a reality. I think if we don't acknowledge it, that it's just avoidance on our part.
But Trenberth says he's still worried that climate change isn't high enough on the list of political priorities. Carbon dioxide is retained for a long time in the atmosphere. So even if emissions were drastically cut today, it will be decades before the effects will be felt.
By the time everyone recognizes that climate change is a major problem, it's far, far too late to do anything about it.
In Albany, I'm Marie Cusick reporting for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1245. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.